Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Loki podcast, the officially unofficial podcast for Loki on Disney Plus. I'm trying to do an intro for this thing. It's the podcast where everything's made up and the plots don't matter. Welcome. Hey, Aaron. How's it going? I'm being facetious on that, by the way, because the plots do matter, but everything is made up.
That's true. That's true. Loki, a subsidiary of Bald Move Pulp. What did you think of this episode, Jim?
I thought it was pretty good. I realized somewhere along the way when they were talking about when Loki straight up asked the question that we had last episode of like, hey, why don't we just go back to before the attack and prevent this whole thing from happening before the Nexus event happens? And they were like, I don't know. Destabilized timeline, weird shit, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh, yeah, I just need to turn off my brain. They're not going to logic a path through the time travel stuff in this. They're just going, they're creating their own mythology around timeline stuff, right? And that's fine. I just need to get in that mindset. And once I did it was a little easier to kind of swallow the rest of what's going on this episode.
They essentially had in that moment, like Christopher Lloyd come on and be like, great Scott, Marty, if you touch your mom, the whole thing will fabric for time. And they're like intentionally telling you, forget all the really advanced time travel shit. Don't worry about Looper. Don't worry about Primer. Don't worry about the Endless. Like, you know, this is just going to be our own thing. This is like Terminator style, paradox free. Kind of detached from causality. Don't think too hard about free will and determinism. They essentially told us all that stuff in this episode. But I liked it. I liked it that because like I still think Owen Wilson and Tom Hiddleston are very entertaining in their chemistry. I think that could go too much either way. But I was also excited to see them kind of break that team up and have Loki go a bit rogue at the end of the episode. I figured that would happen, you know, the inevitable betrayal, but I didn't think it would happen like in episode two. So that's pretty exciting.
Yeah. Or the way it happens. I mean, it is very different. He didn't intentionally like backstab anybody. Yeah. You know, there's a bit of the good and the bad here. And it worked.
It's plausible. Like, I honestly don't know. Like, I mean, I guess seeing this as a Marvel production that like I'm biased to thinking that Loki is going to eventually be some shade of true blue.
Yeah.
True aquamarine at worst. And he's going to come out of here still intact as like some kind of Marvel good guy, maybe anti-hero. But I don't think he's going to be villainous. But there's enough kind of like wiggle room. Like one of the fun things about this episode is everyone talking about like, well, of course you're lying. Every time your lips move, you lie. And every time I turn your back or you see a back, you stab it. And Loki trying to like fight from that position that everyone suspects him of pulling shit all the time. And they're having a lot of fun with that. So I thought that that's all really interesting. There's a lot of like little Easter eggs and stuff that I researched a few that I had time for, I think some people are really overthinking some things just based on my history of the Marvel Cinematic Universe and the TV show so far. It feels like people are really reaching for some of this stuff.
But is the show encouraging that, though? I feel like it is. I feel like every time Loki opens his mouth and says something about like the good guys being the bad guys and vice versa, or it's just like, oh, the great thing about everyone knowing you're a liar is knowing that they know you're a liar and doing things basically like all of that stuff that he's saying is encouraging people to go real deep on the theories, I think.
Yeah, the thing that I always push back is like, you know, I've watched all these Marvel shows. The Falcon, Winter Soldier, WandaVision. I was pretty invested in them. I was following a lot of the fan theories a lot more heavily than Jim anyway. And I felt pretty gratified that in our coverage and our discussions, we didn't get too far into those weeds, because almost every single time the bush wasn't worth whacking, yeah. You know? And I think that that's probably going to be the case here, because the other thing is, like, what are the odds that Marvel's going to do some kind of like reveal that's like double, triple secret comic book history lore? Like, if they're going to pull something like that, they have to bring the audience around with them. Mm-hmm. So, like, you might be able to, you know, be a few moves ahead of them from an obscure character they're going to deploy. But, like, I don't think that, like, advanced comic lore will necessarily help you understand the series, because if it's not comprehensible to the people who are not doing that, and the vast majority of people aren't, then yeah. It's just not going to work. And Marvel knows that. So I would rather be a person who knows that knew nothing about Guardians of the Galaxy when I went in to see that theater than someone who was a huge Guardians of the Galaxy fan, because I think that former person or the latter person's a lot more likely to be disappointed that it didn't go, oh, this isn't a Silver Age Star-Lord that I was hoping for. And his helmet doesn't look anything like it, and his jetpacks don't work that way. And I'm like, I don't know. So that's what I'm assuming is going to happen here.
So, I mean, that gives me hope, because it makes me feel like I'm not fighting with one hand tied behind my back during these podcasts and while trying to interpret the show. Because, yeah, if they're willing to deviate pretty far from the comics, then it makes me feel like they're valuing me as a viewer a little bit more, because I haven't read the comics.
I'm not even saying they'll deviate. I'm just saying that to the extent that they'll follow them, that has to be on the screen, because what they won't do is just push you out of a lore airplane into the middle of a lore jungle and be like, here's your flashlight. Here's a reading list of 60s and 70s Marvel comic books. Good fucking luck.
Yeah.
You know, because that's a way for like 99% of the fan base to be like, I don't understand what's going on and bail. So,
yeah, no, it's stuff we've talked about with like, you know, video game TV show crossover type things where they want to do both and they want you to consume both of those. But half the audience isn't going to. And so they need to make them independent. But the whole idea was to not make them independent. Yeah, it's a strange thing. I will say that they're certainly laying the tracks for bigger reveals, right? I mean, there's a lot of stuff in here that makes me think that the TVA is not exactly the good guys they claim to be, at least not 100% good guys, like Loki says. And we'll get more into that. What's that?
Might even be a fraud, a scam, like a flimflam.
Could be.
These masters of the time universe, has anyone seen them? Has anyone communed with them?
That's the thing. The characters we're familiar with have not seen them or necessarily seen them or talked to them. So,
right.
All good questions. The timekeepers could be the equivalent of jet skis to Mobius, right? He's heard of them.
Yeah.
He just can't go actually ride one. And okay,
sure.
Poor metaphor. He doesn't want to ride the timekeepers, but you know where I'm going with that, right?
You don't know. Maybe he would. Maybe their pseudo's timekeepers are sexy as fuck.
Maybe.
Question is whether they want to ride you.
Yeah.
I do. It does. Like, there seems like there's a big Wizard of Oz energy here. Like, pay no attention to the timekeepers behind the, you know, vast mysteries of the epilogue of the future. I think there's a lot of ambiguity about. And that's also like every single time you find like some kind of good guy authoritarian figure in the Marvel universe, it seems like they're secretly bad guys.
Yeah.
You know, I'm thinking like, you know, speaking of Star-Lord, his dad, you know, seemed like a villain in the end. There's been a few times there where the good guys about the law and order, think about how like S.H.I.E.L.D. got corrupted by Hydra. A lot of people, they're trying to enforce a way on like a broader reality, tend to be high control. And those people tend to be, you know, evil. So yeah. Short-sighted.
Yeah, I think there's a certain inherent evil in what the TVA does, but we'll talk about that. And maybe we should get to the recap now.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time. They stole my village.
I know where they're taking your clan.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
Commission podcasts are an awesome feature here at Bald Move that allows you, the individual listener, to decide what we talk about for a single podcast.
The community loves it because it often leads to fun, fan-favorite films and TV shows that we've overlooked getting the coverage they deserve.
And we love it because we're constantly exposed to great stuff that's not even on our radar.
The way it works is simple. You go to support.baldmove.com and you click on commissions. Then you pay the flat rate for the commission and tell us what two-ish hours of content you'd like us to make podcasts on.
Then we'll contact you for details, advanced feedback, and any dedications you'd like to make.
Then we watch the thing, discuss the thing, turn it into a podcast, and pump it right into your ears.
We get consistently great feedback on how much our commissioners love their podcast, and they make great gifts for the dedicated Bald Move fan in your life.
And who knows, that dedicated fan could even be you. Treat yourself. Check out support.baldmove.com for more info. All right, we start off in Oshkosh, Wisconsin. In 1985, a TVA has tracked Variant to a Renaissance festival, and the Variant mind controls one of the TVA task force people, C-20, and forces her to attack the others, and then drags her through a time portal.
I really like the fake out, Ren Faire fake out, because they're playing, you know, green sleeves, and it looks like at first glance that, oh, we're going to go back to the Middle Ages like we've done before. But no, it's just
right as the time counter is like spinning and eventually hits 1985. Yeah.
And I go ahead.
Is it just me, or is the person there that's trying to talk at the task force here? Does she look a lot like Agatha? Am I crazy?
Oh, no, I didn't see that.
I don't think it's literally her, but I thought she looked a lot like her.
Gotcha. I did like that. Some of us need this, you know. Although yeah. I will say that, like, I've been to a lot of Ren Faire Fest, never one in the 80s, but the earliest one I went to is probably the late 90s. It's not you definitely see your medieval and your quasi-medieval, but you also see a lot of dudes, like, dressed up like the fucking Matrix. And black trench coats and their katanas. And like, I think that a squad cosplaying as some kind of time cop would be very fucking on brand for a Midwestern Ren Faire. I really do. I don't think that they would have stuck out like sore thumbs. People would definitely be thinking, oh, they're doing something. They're doing a bit. But yeah.
Yeah. And then there's people like me who just go there in shorts and sneakers. Right. And a shirt. I'm wearing a shirt, too. It's nothing weird. But you know, just regular everyday clothes. Does that take you out of it?
Yeah. Oh, I mean, that's the vast majority of people at a Ren Faire are just like just normal people, you know. Like right. If you want to take the extra step, I mean, hell, if you want to joust, then join up with the traveling Ren Fest juggling troop, or whatever band of winches. Like, yeah, sure, whatever. Get your leather corset and hike up them tits. Do whatever you want. I'll be the guy in the 21st century attire.
Yeah,
maybe I'll have a horn. I do have a little horn, a mead mm-hmm. horn that I carry with me, so I get into a spirit a little bit.
Yeah. Here's right off the bat, we start with something like something related to this idea that the bad guys are never just bad and the good guys are never just good. And it's this song, I Need a mm-hmm. Hero. When this song is playing, the way that I Need a Hero is used is always when someone is becoming the hero, when someone is doing something good and right and just, that is when that song is used. And this song is played presumably by the Variant Loki, right? Who all just, everybody's seen this episode, I'll just start calling Lady Loki.
That's what I had in my notes too.
Is that not like just the, you know, popular nomenclature? Is that?
I don't know. I haven't done a lot of. I watched this thing. I did a little bit of research on a high school, and I sat and I compiled feedback and I sat down to talk with you.
Oh, well, it's the obvious choice, right? Lady Loki. The alliteration works.
Yeah.
So clearly, Lady Loki fashions herself the hero here. which to me says the TVA, if I'm to buy into maybe this bad guy is actually a little bit of a good guy, and I could see that based on what the TVA is doing, which we'll talk about in a bit, you have to start wondering, like, okay, what is the purpose of the TVA, really? Are they, what are the consequences of the decisions they're making? Things like that. And that's immediately what I thought when I heard this very sort of off tone song in an episode that starts with what you think is the villain.
Yeah, I mean, they definitely. I'm not sure, because like the other thing is, like, you know, Loki is the goddess in this case of mischief. So there is something interesting and like subversive to playing a heroic anthem about people rising to the occasion to be a hero if you are engaging in villainy. But like I mean, come on, two episodes in, they're really coding the TVA with a lot of darker shades.
Tons.
Like, you know, when they're talking about like when Loki's reciting the benefits of the time canister sanitizers and he's like, oh, it does this and that just so the time can heal its wounds. Sounds like it's just disintegrating a whole bunch of people to me.
Yeah.
And like order versus chaos, you know, like it, are we talking chaos and like some kind of eldritch god? Are we talking chaos, like chaotic good? Because I think that if this Loki is trying to do something to destabilize the sacred timeline, I mean, I just think all that stuff is loaded. Like when I hear about this stuff, it starts to sound culty.
It's authoritarian.
And then, and then when it's like, oh, well, there's these divine things that created everything and they're the ones we can trust. But oh, no, that you can't actually commune with them. They, you just have to believe us that they know better. And we're the ones that interpret their will. And that's going to have to be good enough for you. Like, that just sets all kinds of alarm bells ringing in my head. So
for sure,
it almost feels like they're giving away a bit much, to be honest.
But we only have four more episodes.
That's what I'm saying. These episodes really, these are essentially like long movies. So
yeah,
at the end of your first act, you should kind of have a good idea of who's the good guy, who's the bad guy. And I think if you're paying attention and you're not the background watching, you're getting a good idea of who's who here.
Mm-hmm.
All right, not that everyone in the TVA is evil, because I think the vast majority of people who are just doing their jobs are probably decent time entities. But I'm not sure about this judge.
Ravenna
or the R Slayer.
Ravonna? Is that her name?
Yeah, might be evil or evil adjacent or doing some banality of evil type stuff.
All right, Loki reviews some of the basics of his TVA training, and then Mobius comes by and tells him, hey, there's been an attack, gives him this jacket to wear, which says Variant on the back. Very funny. I'm not sure how he saw what it said, but he seems to know. Loki's briefed on the situation, which includes information about a bunch of other Lokis that they've captured before. They don't know as much about the one that they're chasing, though.
Yeah, this is where, like, so much of this stuff is just straight up Rick and Morty. The whole, like, oh, these Loki variants have, like, slight or maybe sometimes not so slight initial, like, a monstrous Loki. It's set.
Yeah.
It's very, like I said, this is very Council of Ricks. Like, there are. It's actually really funny to watch a lot of people who I know professionally that disdain Rick and Morty and thinks it's all stupid bullshit just fall over themselves praising how innovative and cool this is, because this is literally just Rick and Morty with the fucking serial numbers filed off, man.
Yeah.
Like, this is all very, very Council of Rick stuff. Finite curve of the timeline kind of business. But it also sets us up for the when, you know, Loki reveals herself to be a goddess at the end, then it's like, oh, well, yeah, if you can have a monstrous Loki, then for damn sure you can have one as gender bent. Have a frost giant that was born of a frost girl instead of a frost boy. But yeah,
and they set up a lot more Nexus stuff here. They talk about the Nexus events and what happens when, you know, it branches past the red line. That's when they can no longer reset the Nexus event, and this just serves to like set up the stakes for a scene later where they're counting down and, you know, Loki's stalling and Mobius is indulging him, all that kind of stuff.
Do you believe this stuff at face value? Because the thing is that here's another, like, take it at a matter of faith, like, well, reality is still intact, so apparently the red line has never been reached. So, like, are we really sure that if we eat of this fruit that we will you know, attain the knowledge of good and evil, or like what? I just think that it's interesting that we're just taking this. This is all the rules. Well, the rules say if you get past a red line, everything ends. Well, obviously that's never happened. So how do you know that? Or is that red line just mean it's going to get outside of the timekeeper's control, which is a whole different thing than reality ending? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it asks questions about like what happened initially to create the TVA, right? Because if it's never happened, because if it did happen, it would be out of their control to put that genie back in the bottle. Then how did they put the genie back in the bottle and create the TVA and get down to one sacred timeline in the first place, you know?
Right, right. And so, is that like I said last week, is like, I'm not even sure that's happened. Because and they're begging all these questions when Loki's like, we're from the future. All right, wait, are we actually from the future? The like, who the hell knows with this finite timeline and these people, you know, like the end is known, but the future is not? What the hell is that all about? Does that mean that like they are the only ones that have free choice? And they even say that in the episode. Loki's like, well, it sounds like we're the only ones that actually have any kind of freedom. And so they're all putting this stuff on the table. This is also a scene where Loki broke down like the detailed differences in different illusion magic.
Yeah.
And I bet dollars to donuts that that's going to be very plot. That's going to come back in late in the third act, that there's going to be multiple Owen Wilsons. And because of the slight differences in casting illusions versus duplication, it's going to allow Loki to know which one is which, or Owen Wilson vice versa. I guarantee this is going to be important, even though it seems like just Loki being pedantic.
Right. Yeah, that's the best way to disguise important information, is to put it in the mouth of some asshole you don't really want to listen to.
Yep. Yep.
All right, Mobius keeps Loki on track by dangling a carrot, I guess, in front of him, this meeting with the timekeepers. They go back to 1985, where Mobius explains why they can't just travel back to before the attacks to stop them, and then Loki proves he's been paying attention by reciting the use of these reset charges. And then they go in and investigate this tent where the attack happened, and Loki, you know, does this whole ruse where he says, oh, it's a trap, and if you go outside, you'll end up just like them. Mobius doesn't believe him, figures out that he's just talking shit, and then decides, hey, let's reset the timeline.
I love that scene where Owen Wilson's just kind of looking at him with the eyes narrowed for like several seconds.
Yeah.
The timeline's ticking down. Nah, he's lying. Nah, this is there's nobody out there. And it's almost like... it adds a little bit of patheticness to Loki. Like, you really can't even do one mission just straight up. Like,
he has no sense of like, hey, I'll bide my time, and then when the time is right, I'll make this plan and make my escape. No, he just goes immediately for it.
It's funny because this feels a lot like playing Secret Hitler with a group of friends.
Yeah,
because you've always got the person who is pulling some kind of crazy shit like that. I can think of the times where we've all done it, but I remember memorably the one time where, for whatever, the luck of the draw, you had never been a fascist. You'd never been dealt a fascist card, and you were using that as evidence as that you will never be a fascist.
It's like 13 times in a row, and I'm like, man, again.
And it, like, I was like, I cannot believe you guys are like taking, but like, you know, whatever. It's like, but like, yeah, the fact that like Loki, that's his move, man. So he's always going to do it.
Yeah.
And if, I don't know, like if you're, I wonder what the strategy is, because obviously he's got a lot of experience with this. Like, he is the trickster god. So how does he ever do his tricks? Right. Mm-hmm. Well, there's a trick to this. And I guess maybe if you just try and shit all the time, that you get people like looking like used to looking at the surface level, and then you start building that to like layer the I think it's going to be fun because I feel like that there's no way they're doing all this kind of messy shit without going genuinely try to blow our minds once or twice in the series. So I really hope they do.
Certainly hope so,
because I think that'll be a lot of fun. And I don't know, I will say this, that like maybe the people that are really, really beating at the edges of the bushes trying to find all the secrets of this show maybe might be ruining the magic act a little bit for themselves. And that's fine. I'm just saying that like gosh, I see a lot of people watch shows like this and then get to the end of it and they figured out everything. And then they're like, oh, that felt perfunctory. Well, fuck, it did. Yeah. You had 10 million people on the internet trying to solve this puzzle. And so I'm going to be reading the speculation and go to, but like, I know what I'm getting myself into. And I won't complain when I figure Loki out before it's ready for me to.
Was it this show that we were talking about in terms of Leftovers and how one of the guys who's created this was a fan of the Leftovers and wanted to do some type of thing? Because when I think of the Leftovers, I think of Let the Mystery Be. I think of don't try and figure out what happened to the 2% because we're never going to tell you. Is there going to be a little bit of that element in here? Like, don't look for the larger trick the Loki is trying to pull here, because that's not what this show is about. This show is about morality and redemption and all those kinds of things that Loki's story has been about in the past.
I hope so. Because like the fun thing about the Leftovers is there was tons of things where you could delve into Nat Geo articles and submarine launch codes and all kind. Yeah. The Axis Mundi concepts and all this other stuff. And at the end, like, I don't know that those didn't ever pay out, but like, that's not what I remember about the Leftovers. And I think that would be the best way to ape the Leftovers, is to have all this complex stuff. But like, what you really want to know is what's in Loki's heart. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the thing. And that's, you can be a lot more inscrutable about that kind of stuff and still keep people, you know, beating the bushes of these larger mysteries that the show itself isn't that interested in. Or if it is, it's just to launch. Yeah, you know, like I got a piece of feedback last week where, you know, we were wondering, it's like, yeah, I wonder if like Doctor Strange is going to be like the big standard bearer of the MCU going forward with this multiverse stuff. And someone like derisively, well, I don't know, they might just poke in gentle fun. It's like, oh, I don't know, guys. The title of the Doctor Strange next movie is Multiverse of Madness. Gee, I wonder if it's going to be taken to, like, clearly that's what they're intending. So it should be. I just expect it. I want like one or two genuine twists to take me by surprise, and I want them to be fun. And I don't think that's too much to ask. And I think this show is capable of delivering it.
Sure. So let's go to the next scene where Mobius meets with the judge. She's on his case about his unorthodox methods, but he insisted, I'm using Loki to learn about the variant that we're chasing. And then he asks about the timekeepers, and the judge says, oh, they're doing just fine. You know, don't worry. You'll never meet them, essentially, is what she says. He says he's never met them, in fact. And then she gives him one final chance with Loki, sends him off with kind of a warning. Hey, if this goes wrong, there's not much I can do for you. Ominous. Especially with the way that the end of this episode turns out.
Yeah. You pretty much nailed it. Like, this whole, like, this does feel very much like some kind of cult. You know, like, oh no, you can't see or meet our leader. They're too busy. They're all doing the right things, all true. And also they have their eye on you, you know? Like, they're deeply invested in what you're doing. And it's all of universe. Like, I recognize this sales pitch.
Yeah. yeah.
So did you make, if anything, him getting that pin that said Franklin D. Roosevelt High School on it?
I did not.
So that's the one thing I knew a lot of people would be talking about. So I looked into it, and there's this really complicated theory people are working on that this is like the harbinger of Molecule Man, which is an obscure hero / villain in the Marvel universe. But I think, okay, I think it's all bullshit. I think y'all are overlooking, they're way overthinking this. Because the, like, if you do a search, like, there's there, if you search for like Franklin D. Roosevelt Marvel, there's no results. But this is the most famous real life high school of is in Brooklyn, New York. And in the MCU, Steve Rogers, one Captain America, hails from Brooklyn. And I think they're suggesting, because there's one of the big questions coming out of episode one is like, how did Steve Rogers do this crazy time loop where he became a variant for 50 plus years going back to make time with his old sweetheart after he set everything back right? Like, how the hell did he get away with that, with the TVA breathing down everyone's neck? And I think this is to suggest that Steve inked the deal with the TVA to get some kind of exception because of his service to the sacred timeline.
That's the other agent she's talking about.
Yeah. I think that's what they're hinting at. I think it's nothing more complicated than answering some of these questions that people obviously had because in-game was so fucking timey-wimey. And how are they trying to say? I think this is just a little easy. They might not even like make anything bigger of it than that. But like, I think all this people trying to suggest that this is going to be some new MCU villain and stuff, I think that's way, way off base. It's just a Captain America nod. I think people are
like right to be looking for the next characters that Marvel's going to introduce.
100%.
Because they killed a lot of them, right? They need to replenish their ranks. So I understand the reasons behind why you might be looking for that stuff, but I like that theory a lot.
Especially since Franklin D. Roosevelt, if you know anything about him, you know that secretly he had a severe, he was a very puny physically, you know, had a condition where he could stand only with difficulty, was in a wheelchair. The press kind of hit it. His alter ego was, you know, President, you know, Delano Roosevelt, who strode the globe as this giant and made these deals, won World War II, et cetera, et cetera. I think there's like some nice synthesis between Steve Rogers, who famously puny, not physically impressive, but became a giant because of superstar. I think there's some like neat synergy there with Franklin Roosevelt and Steve Rogers as well. But I could be wrong. Could be the harbinger of Molecule Man and everybody can point and laugh at me. We'll see.
Yeah. Cool. I like it. I also noticed some probably just, you know, fun imagery stuff they're doing here. These water rings on the table. When he lays down this glass, it like he doesn't lay it right on the water rings. He lays it next to it in sort of an overlapping figure eight symbol, which I thought was just, you know, a little nod to the Mobius name. And the theremin music in this scene is really cool, which it has like a 1950s sci-fi of the era of the aesthetic of this place. Right.
Yeah, for sure.
So I don't know, all that stuff was really adding up to a real cool scene for me. And then we get a walk and talk with Mobius and Loki, during which Mobius sort of confounds Loki's attempts to prove that he's the superior intellect and then tells Loki, hey, you're on your last chance here, bud.
And it's fun because both characters are nakedly trying to manipulate each other. Yeah. And like, even like that's the dialogue, like you can't manipulate me. I'm manipulating you. Well, I'm 10 steps ahead of manipulating you. Oh, yeah. Well, this whole thing has just been a manipulation of you. And
right.
Yeah. And here's a choose your own adventure. A, I'm manipulating you, or B, I'm manipulating you for my own purposes. I thought that stuff was really well done. And like at the end, like Tom Hiddleston does a really good job of showing Loki kind of like unsure. And
if they are doing more, if Loki does have some grand plan that this is all part of, they're doing a really good job of disguising it in these moments with his acting, because I'm feeling those moments where he feels like, oh shit, this person entity, I don't know what it is, just got the better of the god of mischief, you know?
Yeah. It has him off balance anyway.
Yeah. Good stuff. So Mobius tells Loki to go over each of these case files and sits him at a desk reviewing paperwork. Loki gets super bored and he wanders over to the record keeper and tries to get a bunch of files. He can't. He can only have access to his own file. So he grabs that and he sits back down and finds a detailing of the destruction of Asgard and some variance energy detected at it, which kind of gets his brain juices flowing there.
I like how they set you up to think that like he's actually having another realization of like his... You know, like he's having a sad moment about Asgard getting wiped out. And
I think he is also, but yeah,
is he? Because like, when the guy's acknowledges that's a sad, he's like, oh, yeah, it's terrible, tragic. Anyway, like I think that's
the cover. I think he's like trying to play off his emotional connection to it because he knows he can be manipulated with it. Right.
I thought it was this us as trying to throw us, the audience, off because it's like we're going to have another wooby Loki. But it's like, yeah, his mom and his brother that he cared about is already dead. Like, what's this going to like all the other Asgardians he probably saw himself as superior over? Like, does he really care? Because he's still like I think this episode's a good reminder. Loki's still a bad guy. Like him capering around all the doomed people of Vesuvius kind of lets you know that it's, you know, like he's not. His morality and empathy is not where you'd want it to be.
So he takes his findings over. Oh, by the way, I'm digging the look of this I can only describe it as like a large hotel lobby kind of look. You know when those hotels have like the big atrium area and you look up and it has like the elevators like the conference that go up hotels. And then layer after layer of balconies?
Yeah.
That's what this looks like to me. And that is kind of the perfect like corporate feel for this timey-wimey place. I don't know if it's infinite, but it's certainly a large corporate place.
Yeah, it's the timeline of everything that could possibly happen to everyone.
Okay, so it's probably infinite. Anyway,
well, I don't know. They pruned the shit out of it, so you know, is it still infinite if it's just a single sacred timeline?
Yeah, good question. Loki takes his findings over to Mobius and tells him, "Hey, the variant's hiding in apocalypses," and he does so with this metaphor that ruins everyone's lunches. And then he asks Mobius to take him to one of these apocalypses to test his theory. Mobius doesn't really trust him enough, but he does trust that Loki loves to be right.
Yeah, it's a good scene. And I actually think it's a really great concept. The idea that you can camp out at these apocalyptic moments. And even if you fuck up and make a minor change the timeline, it doesn't matter because everyone and everything in this area is about to be destroyed.
Yes.
So that's as far as I know, an innovation to time travel lore. And good job. Good job that you can still do one in 2021.
Yeah. No, and the rules they've set up, it works really tightly. I like it. And I really love this next scene where they go through a time portal to Pompeii in 79 AD, which is when Mount Vesuvius erupts, kills everybody there. And Mobius wants to be, you know, extremely subtle about the way they tamper with the timeline. So, you know, he's wants to be needlessly subtle here, and which Loki goes on to prove by going full future apocalypse prophet mode. It doesn't even make a blip on the Tempad, which is like this variance meter that Mobius has. And they come back to HQ and they dig through the history to find natural doomsdays, which, of course, they get bored with and just go on a walk. Because there's a lot of them, apparently.
Yeah.
This is a great scene. This is probably the best scene in the episode, in my opinion, because it's so much fun. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, him like letting, because he's like, oh, we should start a small disturbance, maybe make some animal noises. And like Loki just runs and like lets all the goats free and jumps on the cart and starts, it's like you said, Old Testament doom prophesying.
Yeah.
And it's got to be a good feeling for him, because as he essentially dams the whole town, the volcano explodes. And there it's nice seeing like the pyroclastic cloud come closer and closer as Loki's like, you see. And you're like, all right, well, yeah, how's, but obviously they get out. You're right. It was a really fun scene and got to do some period costuming. Someone pointed this out to me in The Mandalorian, this 3D stage effect that they're using. It's essentially fancy rear screen projection. I'm seeing it everywhere.
Yeah,
the volume space. Like the volume space was the temporal library. The volume space was Pompeii. Because it's just like there's a little bit of like, what do you call that? Like color correction, maybe, that you just can't quite. It's a little bit washed out. It's a tiny shade that gives it away from like a real background. At least that I'm seeing. Maybe it's just when they're compositing it poorly. But
maybe I haven't really been looking for it.
Yeah, ever since someone sent us the making of, I just feel like I'm seeing it everywhere now.
Gotcha. I mean, hey, man, if you got a hammer, you're going to use it to hit nails, screws, whatever you got.
Yeah, if you want to believe hobbits are 3 feet tall, just never watch the special features on the Lord of the Rings DVDs, you know, like it'll ruin that for you right quick.
This does raise the question of like, what do they define as natural disaster? And they. An apocalypse or a doomsday. And they do give some sort of definition here. They say it has to be naturally occurring. It has to be sudden with no warning and no survivors. And I don't, the sticking point to me is no survivors. What does that mean? Does that mean, because presumably everyone knows about a hurricane, right?
I thought a hurricane was an odd choice for the one of these type of things. You know,
even if it kills everyone in its path, the people still know about the apocalypse that happened. It doesn't have no survivors. Yeah,
like, maybe at the epicenter, like at that Walmart or whatever future Walmart. Like, but yeah, it's yeah, yeah. Like even, but I guess like they're depositing that in 2050 with current climate change trends that you're going to have such horrifically devastating hurricanes that they literally could scour for dozens of miles around every bit of human life, because that's what you need.
Yeah.
Like if it's going to be fucking Pompeii, then, you know, because I just don't buy that. Like if you just hunkered down at a wall, like if 100 people hunkered down at a Walmart and a category 5 hurricane direct hit it, I don't buy that all 100 people die.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like a superheated cloud of steam moving at the speed of sound. Like, yeah, that'll do it. But I thought it was a little weird, but maybe these are super category 8 hurricanes that you get in the future.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe they're, I don't know, category 10. Who knows?
Yeah.
But I don't know. I was going with, you know, wherever the show wants to take me on the doomsday stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Just let it go there. Then Loki is waxing nostalgic about 90s jet skis as they kind of just sit and talk here. And Mobius uses this 90s jet ski connection to talk about his own glorious purpose. Loki talks about free will, the nature of good and evil, and then reminds Mobius that he called him a scared little boy, which leads Mobius to connect some dots, and he runs over to the archives and he fetches the Kablooey gum that the variant left in the cathedral last episode and claims that they now have two variables, Doomsday and Kablooey.
Mm-hmm.
And that they'll go cross-reference those two things because Kablooey was apparently only in production from 2045 to 2050, whenever. And so now they're looking for just those doomsdays that he could be hiding in.
Yeah, that narrows things down when you're talking about all of human history.
Very much.
For sure. But there's a lot of this is pretty another dense exposition scene, but also just really kind of like, again, prepares us for the idea that TVA might be villainous because, you know, like what is Owen Wilson waxing about here? About it, freedom.
Yeah.
And, you know, the fact that like everything is chaos and I, a good thing came out of that chaos and I'm fortunate that I, you know, expressing all that and then contrasting that to, well, if there's no chaos, if everything's just all order, then that's boring and it's unfree, you know? And the fact that no one bad is truly bad and no one is good is truly good. If that's true and probably is, that applies to the timekeepers, which means, so what ways are they bad? Like I said, they're giving, it feels like they're giving away a lot of the store in the second episode, but,
I mean, I can easily guess a way that they would be bad. I mean, best intentions, you know,
sure.
They want to prune for a specific timeline, which necessarily excludes all other timelines that could exist, thereby, you know, denying existence to far more people than they actually preserve existence for. So that in itself could be inherently evil.
And that's something that they explored in like Westworld season 3, the idea that if you pick winners, you by necessity have to pick losers. And is that fair for the losers? You know,
right.
Like if everyone could be a winner, great. But like if only 90% of people and then 10% of people have to fail hard or be wiped out of existence, like in, you know, some kind of bullshit Thanos snap type of deal. But A, what the fuck? And B, who the fuck gets to decide who those winners and losers are? So I think that's all.
In this case, it's reversed. Like 99.999 repeating percent of people are being expunged from existence in order to preserve it for the 0.00 repeating one who are being preserved on this sacred timeline. You know, there's an infinite number of timelines that should spawn off and they prune them all. So,
yeah, before they even get to exist, before they even get to start. It seems pretty bad. Seems pretty unfree.
Right. And it does, you know, it also raises questions about the timeline itself. Like, what does the end of time even mean? What is the destination we're striving toward? If time is infinite, how can we ever reach the end of it? What is this like? Oh, we'll meet at the end of time in the piece or something, whatever he says there. It's like you're striving toward a goal that is inherently unreachable.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. And the fact that, you know, nobody that we know has actually seen these timekeepers also adds to the sinister feeling here for me anyway.
Yep. I don't like putting faith in institutions I can't see.
Yeah. Okay, so yeah, they narrow it down to, you know, a timeline in Alabama in 2050. Yeah, so as I said, they travel here, or well, they go to the judge and they say, hey, we've narrowed it down to a time and a date, a time and a location here. It's Haven Hills, Alabama, which was destroyed in this hurricane, and we need a task force to go check it out. And she's reluctant to give him that, but his excitement convinces her, I guess, his enthusiasm for the job. And she warns him that, hey, if this goes wrong, I can't help you. This is it. This is the last chance for both of you. And so Mobius grabs Loki and they get another briefing. They like to do briefings in this show a lot. I think we've already had at least three, maybe four.
Yeah.
B-15 tells him, okay, we're going to prune any Lokis we find and watch out for traps because the variant has stolen several reset charges. And then they go to Haven Hills. And she also talks about like where these people are sheltered, right? This Roxcart superstore in the warehouse being used as a shelter. It's a class 10 apocalypse, which we don't have any context for that, I guess. But surely the apocalypse number goes higher than a class 10, right? Or maybe this is like a DEFCON thing. Does it go to class 1? That's the worst.
Yeah, I wish I'd freeze framed when he was going over some of the dossier stuff for like
what was Ragnarok.
I think. Yeah, they all had this kind of like, oh man, what is that? What's that? There's like this shared reality kind of like Wikipedia, CSP, where they have like, you know, they classified entities as like what kind of threat they are, like Euclid or Cupiter or something like that. Like, it seems like there is some kind of. What I'm saying is this they have some kind of absolute like Richter scale for disasters, and maybe goes higher than 10, but I got to feel like 10 means no survivors, absolute destruction, or what, you know?
Okay.
If it's not at least like total devastation and loss of all people, then how the hell can you guarantee that there's not going to be any variant energy created there?
So does the class not factor in like magnitude of or the number of dead? Because Hurricane ain't gonna kill that many people, not nearly as many as a lot of other apocalypses I can think of.
Maybe you got class and then scale, like class 10 scale, county, state, country, planet. Because like I noticed the Asgardian one
was
like
planet, superstore.
It was like a planet. It said like planet, like a complete planetary destruction or something. So
yeah.
Like it's 1 through 10, how fucked up things are. And then what scale the fucked upness is. Maybe
I imagine we're going to be touring several of these, because that's the thing about this variant, right? Lady Loki has nowhere else to hide but in these apocalypses. So now that they've tracked that, they know where to find her. So we're going to be going to these apocalypses all the time.
And that's a great hook
for like Marvel, who loves to do big flashy graphics, right? CGI stuff.
Yeah,
this is going to be perfect for that.
I wonder if there's going to, because like the thing is that they've established that if you don't have another factor to narrow it down, that like just civilizational destruction on across the universe in all recorded history is an impossible thing to go through. It's trying to find a needle in the haystack. So it's like, I wonder how they'll establish the other confounding variable, especially when the variant, the two Loki variants are in, you know, cahoots, or at least in, you know, working together for the next episode, if nothing else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good question. They go back there to Haven Hills, and they go to the warehouse where the residents are taking shelter. B-15 wants to keep her eyes on Loki and insists that he pair off with her. Mobius objects, but Loki seems to be okay with it. So he's trying to earn their trust, is what he says. And the variant's watching.
I love how Mobius also, before they leave, tries to offer Loki his trademark double daggers back, and like B-15 snatches him, like, absolutely not.
No.
it's she's appropriately skeptical of the God of Mischief here.
Yeah. The variant is watching them sort of and sets this 20-minute timer. He's watching it through screens. Sorry, mm-hmm. she's watching him through screens.
Ah, like how you just defaulted to the person of action there being a male. Yeah, I saw what you did there.
Talking about this being Loki and yeah.
Yeah, I get
what are you going to do? My brain is hardwired. I'm trying to softwire it. Why is it? This is a great line. I love it. Why is it that the people you can't trust are always saying, trust me? I love that line from Mobius. And it's so true.
I think it's a selection bias. You don't remember the times your friends say, trust me, and that they don't betray you. It's the ones where they say trust you and then they immediately betray you. Those are the ones that stick out as red letter days.
That could be true. It also could be true that the people who are trying to exploit trust always have trust on the mind and they're thinking of ways to use it. And so they mention it more often. Yeah. But it could be, yeah, confirmation bias, whatever bias that is. B-15 and Loki search the store and they find this guy they think could possibly be Loki. And then, oops, B-15 knocks him out and reveals that she's actually the variant.
Yeah. I can't remember if we've seen Loki possess people in this way. He calls it, what, enchanting them?
I mean, the only time... Well, it's a good question. Like, is that what he did to C-20 at the beginning of this?
I think so.
Okay.
I think that like, but also that wasn't Loki to begin with. And I'm wondering like, what is the, and this is the subtle differences in the magic that Loki is probably talking about, but why is it more beneficial to like literally possess an earthling than it is to like disguise yourself with an illusion to be one of these people? Because then you actually have presumably your strength and powers as a god. That's the other thing. It's like, you know, Bubba, who Loki will eventually tussle with is a big dude, right? But like, he ain't the Hulk.
It's not a god.
He ain't the Hulk. Yeah, he's not the Thor. No. He's certainly not Thanos. So like, what does it mean? And I do think that they're doing this thing where like, I never bought that Loki was actually in threat. You know, like maybe he didn't want to kill these civilians, but also like, it was very hard for me to square this Loki with the Loki capering around Pompeii. Like, haha, you're all going to be dead. You're all going to be dead. Because, like, why wouldn't he just rip these people's heads off? They're all going to be dead anyway. The second they're, but, like, it's one of those things where it's like, like, most of the times when we're watching a Marvel movie and, like, someone's punching someone else, I have a pretty good idea of, like, you know, who's being hurt or what. But this, I'm really not sure. Because it seems like the only reason Loki wouldn't do that, I guess, is because the story needs Lady Loki to monologue a bit.
I guess if I'm being generous, I would say he doesn't want to upset Lady Loki. He wants to join Lady Loki, and so he doesn't really want to
get her, keep her talking. Yeah, you're probably right.
But what I don't understand is why this is a human scale fight, why this is not a god scale fight, because why Lady Loki isn't throwing god sized punches, right? She's throwing Bubba-sized punches. That doesn't make much sense.
One solution would be that if they had God-sized budget for every episode, they would do that. But this is a 6-hour television series.
The God-sized punch was Pompeii.
Yeah, not a 2.5-hour Marvel movie that's going to make $2 billion worldwide. So
true. All right. Yeah, I mean, maybe we should jump through quite a bit of the end here because this is all happening pretty rapid. And you kind of need the whole thing to really make sense of it. Mm-hmm. Mobius is taken over to C-20, who's tied up and just repeating, it's real, it's real. We don't know
what it
is.
That's the commander that was kidnapped in the beginning of the episode.
Yeah. And then the variant jumps to this other body as Loki tries to get him to show himself. And I'm using the him intentionally here because we still think it's a him, right? Mm-hmm. And then Loki tells the variant that he plans to overthrow the timekeepers and offers a sidekick position essentially to the variant. And the variant says no, and reset charge is planted. We go back to C-20, who says that she gave away information on how to find the timekeepers to the variant. And then they radio B-15, who wakes up. And then in the final scene here, Loki asks what the variant wants a couple of times, actually, as they fight. And then the variant reveals herself to be I wasn't sure if I should know who this was at the time. I'm like, I just put some lady in my notes because I'm like, okay, this is this a manifestation of a different timeline Loki? Is this like a superhero or a supervillain that I don't know about from the timeline?
I think there's definitely, because I remember, I think we were talking about this on some other stream where, you know, it was like a week or two before the show came out and someone said that, like, there was some indications that there was like a gender bent Loki. And in fact, some people were saying that like it was this was going to be a bait and switch where it's like they use Tom Hiddleston to sell all. But like what it's going to all be about is this Lady Loki character. And I'm like, that sounds like, I mean, maybe they do it. And but like it seems like you're going to piss off a lot of people that are hoping for this Loki and they get some other Loki. And obviously that's not true. I mean, Tom's been in a shit ton these first few. So. But I also vaguely remember, because I did not read into this, and again, I'm not a Thor fan, but I also vaguely remember that there was a gender-bent Loki in the comics. So there I'm is, sure yeah. there's a whole bunch of stuff that you can find and speculate about if you go through some of these newer Thor plots. But I haven't done that, so...
Yeah, kind of I haven't either, and I probably won't. I'm just sort of taking the series as it comes. And yeah, so now I know that this is Lady Loki, and there's a version of her in the comics. She drops the reset charges, a shitload of them, like the whole warehouse is revealed to be just full of them, drops them through time portals, causing just a ton of red line branches to come off of the sacred timeline. The TVA springs into action, trying to prune a bunch. And the Lady Loki goes through another time portal and Loki follows her through.
You even got the judge. Getting her baton out of the arsenal to it's like yeah. all hands on fucking timeline kind of situation.
Speaking of the judge, consequences for losing Loki here, that, you know, Mobius was on his last chance. I don't know what this means.
It would be interesting if they'll just purge this Mobius and there'll be another Mobius instantly snaps into his place. Because we talked about this last week right? That was one how like, yeah, because Mobius in Mobius is essentially like in the symbol being infinity, as you pointed out earlier in this episode. And like the early incarnations of this character was him being an infinitely repeating clone series of himself in the TVA. So like, I think that would be a fun thing to play around with.
Yeah,
that, you know, maybe the next Mobius will be a little tougher on Loki's or it'd be like resetting a Janet in the
Good Place.
In the Good Place, that they come back and there'll be a subtle like priority or personality shift. I think that
resetting
would be
kinda... a Derek, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I really meant. I couldn't remember what the Derek's were called, but yeah, I do think this guy that's running the show is definitely pilfering from a lot of that. You know, it's not, you know, obviously Rick and Morty is the one that they got started on. But like, it wouldn't surprise me if they've also watched The Good Place and are stealing some ideas from that too.
Oh yeah,
great! I really like the sweeper fight. The you know, where they're just throwing Roombas and I don't know, long neck Orbex or whatever the hell, using them as nunchucks and stuff. I thought that was, you know, it's not a god scale fight, but it was funny. I've never seen that happen before.
It was the god scale here is just the number of charges. I was shocked to see that many because I thought, oh, the variant's got like three maybe that we've seen her
a bunch.
Yeah. Hundreds? I don't know. A lot.
I don't know. If you look at it's tough to see, but like if you look at the damage it's doing to the timeline, I don't know how they contain it. We might get to find out what happens with a red line, multiple red line events next episode.
It's either that or my guess is that this is a distraction, that the TVA will be able to put down all these red lines, but just barely, and their resources will be so used up doing that that they'll miss something else that Lady Loki is doing.
That's the point, the real point that Loki, the Lady Loki is trying to do. That's an interesting idea. I do think that like that Marvel is looking for a way to jailbreak this. Like I don't think Marvel likes a purely deterministic universe. And, you know, again, with Doctor Strange, Multiverse of Madness, like whatever happens at the end of this, I think is a mess that Doctor Strange is going to have to contend with, it seems.
Yeah.
So I'm expecting like it could be, because like one thing that could happen is like multiple red line failures happen and the universe is still here. Now what? Do we have a civil war in the TVA suddenly? You know, Like yeah. the judge goes to express her authority and like half the agents are like, well, you guys are all full of shit. What happens then? I think that could be interesting. I'm just not sure what, yeah, what I have no idea what the pacing of this should be, because honestly, this is way faster. Like Loki joining with Lady Loki in the second episode. That's pretty quick.
Yeah. I mean, we don't have a lot of time in this series. It's one of those short British series, right?
Yeah, and I know it's only two episodes in, but I feel like this is the best paced Marvel show that we've had. Like, mm-hmm. you know, there was pacing problems in when they finally started trying to wrench the WandaVision into some conventional Marvel plot.
It was too late on that show for me.
Yeah, it didn't work. And then, like, I thought there was large stretches of like literally why in Captain America and Falcon. So. Or Falcon Winter Soldier, rather. So I think, again, just two episodes in, maybe there's going to be some lulls to come. But like, this has been really well paced.
Yeah, so that's what I'm getting at. Like, I think you're exactly right when you're talking about, like, you know, the good guy being sort of the bad guy here and vice versa. And the TVA being this authoritarian regime, the prunes 99.9% of people from existence. Like. In my estimation, like, the TVA is a force that needs to be taken down, and the Lady Loki is working toward that goal, and she's going to ultimately be shown to be the good guy because of, you know, the horrible consequences that most people don't think about of what the TVA is actually doing. So,
yeah,
I don't know. We'll see if it actually goes there. Maybe they have some other wrinkle that I haven't thought of, but, you know, I've watched a lot of TV. I've thought about time travel and free will and the consequences of it quite a bit in many of our other podcasts. So that to me is like the blueprint of where this goes. But I don't know. Yeah. I'm open to being surprised, and I would be kind of happy if they could take this somewhere else than where I expect it to go.
Oh, 100%. I honestly expect Marvel to be a little bit predictable, because they're just not. I mean, they're not out there trying to be the leftovers, literally. Mm-hmm. Right. Because that show, like, a million people watched, and they're trying to get more than that. I think butts in a seat. I don't even think that, maybe, like, maybe it's 500,000 people watching that contemporaneously. But and if they can, like, if they can hit that gear way back, I mean, obviously, I'm not going to be complaining, but like, I'm just not like, just like, I burnt myself a little bit in the season one of Mandalorian, thinking that like, oh, this is going to be the gritty fucking bounty hunter. And then Baby Yoda showed up, and that was great. But it wasn't what I wasn't the more adult kind of serious, darker side of Star Wars I was really expecting.
Yeah.
So like, ever since that, I'm like, I'm just going to pump the brakes if I'm thinking this is going to be like the fucking Godfather or Citizen Kane. It's just going to be. If they can reliably hit like any of the in-game Infinity war type of beats, then I will be ecstatic. But yeah,
are you holding out hope for Book of Boba Fett being the darker, grittier bounty hunter tale that we're all kind of,
you know,
looking
it would
for?
Be ironic after they got all this other stuff out and they finally do like, oh yeah, this is going to be the fucking heart. But like, that's just not Disney Plus. No, man, I don't think Disney Plus is genetically capable of giving us like a Logan.
Yeah.
Or a Deadpool. Although I guess they're going to try. They're going to Disney's going to do a Deadpool. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah. We'll see.
So,
but yeah, I like this episode. I like the potential consequences of everything that's happening. And I'm looking forward to seeing how this goes over the next four episodes.
100%.
Anything else to add, or is that about it?
No. We got feedback. A lot of people heeded our call to assemble and feedback. Marvel@baldmove.com is the message, the mailbag we're using going forward. Do you care to do any of those?
No, I don't care to, but I guess we should.
Well, let's take a quick break before we do get the feedback.
Since the dawn of time, we've been putting clothes on our back that identify us with our people, our group, our tribe.
And while Bald Move might be one of the smallest, weirdest tribes out there, transcending all concepts of border, class, culture, and creed, we still have respect for the old ways.
At support.baldmove.com, you can get t-shirts, hats, mugs, and more. We have something for every one of our podcasts, or just wear the four pips of the Bald Move logo with pride.
Bald Move merch beats running around naked, and they make a great gift for the Bald Move fan in your life. Join our tribe! Head over to support.baldmove.com and click on merch to start shopping. You've been listening to quite a few Bald Move podcasts now, but you're not in the club? Whoo boy, you are missing out.
Not only are all of our premium club podcast feeds completely ad-free, but we have lots of other great content exclusively for people in the club.
There's a weekly lunch with Jim and Aaron where we chat with fans about anything and everything from TV and films, food, fun, life advice, and more.
But there's also Off the Clock, our premium podcast where we talk about all the shows we don't have time for on our public feeds.
Plus, you get access to our full spoiler-filled first-run movie reviews of our newly released films.
Don't forget Instant Take and Talk podcast, where we give our hot takes and discuss television shows with our fans live and immediately after the episode airs.
With mega shows like House of the Dragon coming this summer, we're going to have lots to talk about.
Not to mention access to our fun and friendly community of club members, with exclusive Discord channels and a dedicated forum. It's one of the best places on the internet to hang out and chat about pop culture.
Bottom line, you're helping two regular type guys in the Midwest make the content you like to listen to, which some would say is rewarding to itself.
Help keep the lights on and the bits flowing at Bald Move.
And get some awesome content for yourself. Head to support.baldmove.com to join the club today.
We try to make it super easy to support making podcasts at Bald Move. Just join the club.
But some people aren't the joining type, or maybe they're already in the club but want to add a little bit of gratuity for an especially great season of coverage, or for a podcast that really spoke to them, or gave them that bit of support in a tough time.
For these, and for whatever other reason you might have, our tip jar is always open. Head over to support.baldmove.com and click the donate option to say, hey, keep doing what you're doing. We appreciate it.
Once again, check out support.baldmove.com for all the great ways to help me and Jim keep making the podcast you love.
Marvel at baldmove.com is where you want to send this stuff. Let's start with Brent from San Diego, which, of course, is an old Dutch word for whale's vagina. Mm-hmm. Hey, guys. Glad you're taking time to cover this lunacy that will be Loki. I can't help but be blown away by the space slash atomic age style of the show, much of which seems to be borrowed heavily from early seasons of Legion, though no complaints. Just a funny thing I noticed, especially if either of you are Fallout players, the training video contains potentially an actionable copyright claim of Cappy from Fallout 4's Nuka World. Hmm. I'm blown away someone didn't catch this, but if intentional, it's a great little homage. I'm going to cop a big nerd fail here, and I've not played any of the Fallout series.
I have not played them. But I'm vaguely familiar. I've seen images of Cappy before. And yeah, it's pretty similar to the clock here.
Yeah, I do love this, like I said, Atomic Age look and styling. And you're not wrong. It is very heavily like inspired by Legion. Although I think Legion always felt like it was one generation older than that, or younger than that, rather. Like it's like 60s, 70s, kind of like spy chic. Like Diabolique Beastie Boy video, that kind of aesthetic. Whereas this is just straight up, yeah, like Nuka-Cola kind of Atomic Age stuff. Let's move on to Tony's email. First, longtime listener, and I'm thrilled you're doing full coverage of this show. Well, you're welcome. Secondly, I'm digging the show's timber and overall aesthetic, and when the writers and showrunners, I have confidence that they can pull it off. The point of this email is regarding the beginning of the episode during the 2012 callback with the Avengers. I think the Real Project guys mentioned this in their reaction to Eric Voss from the new Rockstars and his breakdown. It started showing Loki mocking Captain America when he walked by and was doing the robot. Well, the original from the film, he doesn't do these hand gestures, and it's a different take, apparently. The question is, what the hell does this mean in the grand scheme of things? Are we even watching the sacred timeline during this callback, or was the original movie not even part of the sacred timeline? Or was it just a director's choice and it means nothing?
About the difference between that very first scene with the Tesseract?
Yeah, okay. Where Loki's doing the robot to make fun of Captain America.
Gotcha.
I think they're suggesting that that was indeed a variant timeline. And that's, you know, because this isn't, again, our Loki. Mm-hmm. And I think that like this also might be this Franklin Roosevelt High School pin to suggesting that like, yeah, what Captain America did is a timeline. But I've also seen, you know, I was fucking around the Marvel Loki subreddit, and there's people doing like, what is that movie called about dreaming? Inception. They're doing Inception style like time diagrams showing the sacred timeline and the Infinity War timeline and where Loki brand. And it all feels a little too much for me because, like, again, like this is all very flat. There is a single sacred timeline and you have an offshoot. You have something that's out of another timeline, but that other timeline no longer exists. It's already been cleaned up by the TVA. Mm-hmm. So like, I don't think we're actually creating paradoxes. They're just recognizing that that was a paradox that got cleaned up, I think, is what you're supposed to understand. Like, I don't remember that first scene from the first episode, but like, wasn't there TVA soldiers there that did set a charge? Or you could presume once you've seen the episode that TVA guys showed up there a minute or two later with a sanitation charge.
He could,
because he's for sure a variant, mm-hmm. and we know those variances for sure cause those spikes, and they have to be cleaned up, or they hit the red line, and then all kinds of shit happens. So,
right,
I think that's why I thought some of those projects were a little bit misguided.
Gotcha.
That you're never going to have a looping timeline, at least until the TVA is dethroned. Yeah. But I could be wrong. I could be wrong.
No, that makes sense.
I just think it doesn't make sense to like try to do like a Looper / Inception. You know, like time diagram.
I mean, it might in the back half of this thing. I don't know. Like, things might get weird now that the TVA has got a lot on their plate.
Yeah, and I guarantee things are going to get fucking weird in like Doctor Strange, because in the first one was out like a bunch of timey-wimey. Right. It was already plenty strange. Although it did have a bunch of time, like the whole final battle with the Dormammu, where took place in infinite time, or could have, like, he wore down a demon with his time right. bullshit
just by pestering him over and over again. Yeah
like maybe the whole movie is going to be stuff like that. Like, that would be a really, like, I would love to see like Marvel try to do like a full-on fucking like Groundhog Day. What if you had like 36 different recursions every 5 minutes? I think that would be an inherently cool, like, throw $200 million at that. I think that's a really cool idea. We'll see if they do it. I mean, shit, Endgame was halfway there. There's at least like 10 different time branches they're fucking around with.
Yeah.
All right. Now we have a real Marvel chronicler here. That's going to be the person that I am not. It's going to be the person steeped in the knowledge, and it's going to take us through some things that they've noticed, some scholarship that they've done and read. Sean, stepping up to do that for us, said, thrilled you decided, thrilled you decided to jump on to season one of Loki. I thought I'd jump in with a neat comic connection to some upcoming MCU happenings. So this judge / superior officer that Owen Wilson keeps talking to is Ravona Renslayer. And it will come as a surprise to no one that this character also has a comics counterpart. Ravona in the comics is not so closely a TVA associate, but is deeply entrenched in Marvel time shenanigans nonetheless. To understand the significance of this name drop, we have to take a detour. The MCU's biggest time traveler has to be Nathaniel Richards. Nathaniel Richards is a 31st century native and blood descendant of Reed Richards or Victor Von Doom, the specifics having been lost to time in various retcons. So Reed Richards, of course, is the leader of the Fantastic Four, scientist extraordinaire, stretchy dude.
Yeah.
Victor Von Doom, everybody knows who Dr. Doom is, right? He's the dude in the full metal alchemist getup.
Okay.
So Nathaniel Richards, this 31st century son of one of these two gentlemen, traveled back to ancient Egypt to rule as the king Rama Tut, only to eventually be deposed by his potential ancestor, Reed Richards in the Fantastic Four. Following this defeat, Nathaniel would cross paths with his other possible father, Dr. Doom. Enthralled by Doom's style, Nathaniel would go on to adopt the guise of the Scarlet Centurion. He spent some time rolling around under that new name, went on to fight the Avengers, losing, discarding the Scarlet Centurion like an internet troll discards an old alt. He would later find himself stranded far in the future, past even his own 31st century origin. In this far future, Nathaniel co-opts her technology and uses their strategic genius to become Kang the Conqueror. He conquers Earth and begins to torment the Age of Heroes, which is in our current time era, to test his skills against foes like the Avengers. During his conquering the far future, Kang meets the daughter of one of the last kings of Earth, whose name is Ravonna. All right, we finally caught up to Ravonna here.
Okay.
Ravonna and Kang would go on to have a very rocky relationship, sometimes together, sometimes as bitter enemies. I've had relationships like that. Kang himself would eventually grow wary of his conquests and take up the role of Immortus, Master of Time. In his final incarnation, Immortus would, generally speaking, work with our friends, the Timekeepers. And here's like some potential spoilers if he's right about the series. So if you want to go on this completely blind, now's a good time. This is the last email, so go ahead and switch off your podcast here. Are we cool? Are you ready for here some Marvel MCU spoilers potentially? Immortus also worked. Wait a second. So he also worked at the Timekeepers to reverse the damage his earlier self did to the time stream. Immortus also worked to keep the Avengers in check after it was revealed that left unopposed, the Avengers would often expand into a universe-conquering force of their own, a la the Fremen Jihad from Dune. That's interesting. The Avengers left without a sufficient challenge and opposition will just fucking mount up and take over the universe.
Yeah, I can see Tony Stark doing that.
Yeah, he was kind of like the whole suit of armor for the Earth. There's that kind of like good people with need for control kind of horseshoe theory. There's definitely that. He specifically worked to orchestrate the dismantling and reassembling of Vision / White Vision, hoping to destabilize the Avengers and Wanda in particular. That's interesting because we know they're going down the White Vision route in this series. Following the eventual dismantling of the Avengers in the early 2000s, one final Kang variant was revealed. This teenage version of Nathaniel saw his future as Kang / Immortus and rejected it. He instead traveled to this low point in Avengers history and assembled the young Avengers using a protocol developed by the at the time deceased Vision. The team featured Hulkling, Asgardian, Speed, Hawkeye the Second, Patriot, Stature.
We don't need
Iron
another
Lad.
Hawkeye.
No, we didn't even need the first
Hawkeye's bad enough.
Yeah, you gotta have a butt of the team joke, you know?
Fair.
And an Iron Lad, which is Nathaniel in futuristic armor.
Okay.
Kang the Conqueror is slated to appear as the antagonist in the next Ant-Man and the Wasp movie, played by Jonathan Majors, who is Atticus from Lovecraft Country. Asgardian is Billy Maximoff, who they also brought back in WandaVision. Speed is Tommy Maximoff, which is also in. So these are the two variant brothers of Wanda, I guess, also featured in WandaVision. Hawkeye 2 is Kate Bishop, played by Hayley Steinfeld, set to appear in the Hawkeye D+ Disney Plus series. So that's Hawkeye's daughter that they introduced us to in Endgame, I think. Patriot is Eli Bradley, grandson to Isaiah Bradley, and this will make sense to people to watch the Falcon and Winter Soldier. That was the super secret Black Captain America that America created and then hushed up in the 50s, who was portrayed by Eli Richardson. And Stature is Cassie Lang, the daughter to Scott Lang, Ant-Man, who's also appeared in Avengers Endgame. She will appear in the next Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania as well. And then there's supposedly a romantic linking between Cassie and Iron Lad. So I wonder if they're I can squint and see a lot of this cat like, OK, we like Iron Man, but we can't bring back Iron Man because he's dead. We can bring back Iron Lad. And the other thing that like the first generation of the Marvel stuff never did is really weave relationships between all of the different characters. You had Hawkeye and Scarlet the Black Widow, but that always felt way more background than it was foreground stuff. And then WandaVision, of course, but like it sounds like they're maybe going to start doing, I don't know, almost like rom-com type stuff, or just like they'll actually be these type of relationships to take things, you know, from the heroes being, you know, it's always nice that the heroes are motivated by a generic love for all mankind or a doing of goodwill. But I always like having a Lois Lane where there's a personification of humanity for a hero to fixate on and for it to stand in for like it's their love for all mankind. Right.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Like, I think having those relationships that the villains can exploit are a good thing. So,
yeah, they did a lot of stuff with family in the first chunk of the Marvel stuff. But yeah, extending that to people who can become your family. You know, I think that's exciting as well.
I thought it was a little much that the final movie, they're all sitting around drinking Coronas. I mean, like, Jesus Christ, enough about the family stuff, guys. We get it.
Yeah,
we get
they live their life one red line at a time. Huh?
Right. And then Vin Diesel took the twisty country road, and there's the ghost of Tony Stark riding, ghost riding the whip right next to him. I don't know if we needed that. Yeah, but how much of this are you buying? How much of this are you buying?
Does I mean, like, cool? Like I said, they need to get a new stable of characters. Yeah. And I think if they're going to do it, they've got a lot to pull from here. And it seems like they're leaning that direction. Like you said, with the White Vision, I could totally see them. Yeah. Just going for it. Going for broke on timeline stuff. You know?
It's interesting how many like second generation characters they've got going on here, but that makes a lot of sense because like why start from scratch asking your audience to care about a character when you can be like, well, this is actually the long lost daughter of so-and-so that you already care about, or this is actually the future bastard son of this other person that you know and care about. I don't think you can like lean on it, but like adding that just to kind of like give the audience emotional breadcrumbs to kind of eat up and be like, oh yeah, okay, I'm invested. That seems smart, especially since you really fucking cleared the goddamn cupboard of heroes and wrapping up the last phase.
And then some, it'll be exactly like what is laid out here, but it'll be similar.
Yeah. And they're even like one, you know, it's cause you had the tragic death of, Chad Boseman, Boswick. Thank you. Jesus Christ. Got it in three, which they obviously, you know, that they were planning on having to replace a lot of heroes. But like, you know, they had plans for that guy. And that's not going to they're going to have to find a way to transfer that into. So any shortcuts they can take to get people reinvested is probably going to be behoove them.
Yeah.
And that's it. That's our feedback for this episode of Loki. If you would like to send in some more scholarly research into the Marvel Universe, please do so. Marvel@baldmove.com. I'd love to hear it. I'm actually really excited to see the next week's show. And I got good vibes. I got good vibes of this stuff. By the way, if you are a fan of Rick and Morty, guess what? We're going to have dueling random timelines of madness because Rick and Morty comes back this weekend. We're going to have full coverage of that. So we're going to be having timey-wimey bullshit on Mondays, timey-wimey Marvel bullshit on Wednesdays. Can our timeline sustain it? I don't know. It's going to be wild trying to keep everything straight.
I feel like Dormammu. Like, I don't know that I can handle this many timelines being thrown in my face. My brain is going to turn to mush.
I've come to marathon your series. Yeah, I we'll see. We'll see how it goes. But you are locked in the Bald Move pulp. You'll be getting both of those time variants streamed right to your ear holes on Mondays and Wednesdays. Anyway, Marvel@baldmove.com. We'll be back here next Wednesday for another episode of Loki. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See you then.